Hey, I'm Jeffrey Masters, and we are technically on a break right now, but I've been recording interviews for our new season, and one of those that I recorded last month was with Darcell the 15th, aka Walter Cole. Darcell was known for being the oldest drag queen in the world. That's something that was certified by the Guinness World Records, and unfortunately, Darcell died last week at the age of 92. We are not officially back for our new season, but I wanted to share our interview today since it was one of her last. So you're going to hear Darcell speak about how much drag has changed in the last 50 years, and she also talks about her bar and drag venue, and that's called Darcell 15 Showplace, and it's in Portland, Oregon. That club opened in 1967 and has been continuously running ever since. In 2020, it was even added to the National Register of Historic Places. Now, Darcell is joined in our interview by Kevin Cook, aka Poison Waters. Poison is another great Portland drag queen who's performed and worked with Darcell for many, many years and also lived just a few doors down. So without further ado, this is LGBTQ&A with the late Darcell the 15th. Here she is. I want to start at the beginning. You were doing drag in 67?
1967.
I thought it was actually like illegal back then in terms of like regulations and like cross-dressing.
It was never really illegal in Portland, in Oregon, but we didn't walk the streets in it. You know, we got up and did the show and went back to the Levi's.
What was Levi's?
The blue jeans.
Blue jeans.
Oh, the pants.
In drag and out of drag.
At the club and not going, you know, from home to the club to the car in drag. Like, drag never left the club.
No.
Because it was still underground, but again, it wasn't illegal. It just was frowned upon and not widely accepted. So it was kind of like a, you know, a speakeasy. If you knew, you knew. The part of town is called Old Town. So back then, it really was just Skid Row and bums and homeless people and kind of the seedy part of town, so to speak. So people came to the club to see the drag show, so they only came for it. So it wasn't like, nobody was there that didn't want to be there. So it wasn't, they weren't doing drag in a place they weren't supposed to be. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So everybody was there for it. So there wasn't any pushback because they weren't taking it anywhere for anybody to push back.
I think what blows me away is that you opened in 1967. That's like 2 years before Stonewall, for context. And I mean, even like Stonewall has not been continuously running. It was a bagel shop, a Chinese restaurant, and yet you've been doing it ever since.
Yes, we haven't stopped. We're in our 56th year.
And so Darcell's was recently added to the National Register of Historic Places since it's been ongoing for all these years. And it's never, you know, the COVID was the first time in all our history that we actually had to close. It was government mandated. So, of course, like everybody else, we were closed.
Wow.
And so many places, big and small, all around us, never came back. But we had such an outpour of community people that were, the minute we could have people back, they were lined up to keep the club going.
Poison Waters made it happen along with me. I didn't do it alone. That's for sure. And my same cast came back as soon as we unlocked the doors. They didn't go somewhere else to work.
And so going back to 1967, when you bought the tavern that became Darcell's Showplace, you were actually still married at that time, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was.
And so did your wife, like, know that you were, like, operating, like, what became a gay bar?
No. She read it in the paper. We were already not together. I told her I was gay. It came out to her, but we weren't living together then. But it still was the first time she knew that was in the paper. We were a little bit away from each other at that point.
Estranged. But that didn't last.
Which doesn't last long.
No,
yeah.
It didn't last.
It didn't last long. We're family. I have a daughter and a son, and we have two grandchildren and two great-grandchildren.
In terms of, like, telling your family this, was the way they reacted to you being gay different than the way they reacted to finding out you were doing drag?
Well, I don't think it mattered at all by then whether I was doing drag or how I was appearing on stage, because it was very popular. and their friends had all been in our neighborhood, you know, Daddy, let's go see that bitch.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true. It probably would have been, now, I've never heard anybody ask that question before. That's a good question. I think if the club had not been a success in readily accepted by the community, mainstream community, I think they probably would have had a different idea, but they're like, hey, you're popular and you're on TV and you're making money.
And all the city commissioners and the mayor and everything. The mayor was in the other day and he said, I want a picture of you. I've only got 2 years left and you're not really the mayor until you take a picture with Darcelle.
Yeah. Darcelle said all the mayors and the governors and everybody's come through.
They were supportive.
That's amazing. But like, at what point in like, so I've been doing this for like more than 50 years. At what point did it become that kind of like celebrated thing where like the mayor, the governor wants to take a picture of Darcelle? I imagine that like with stigma and shame in like the 70s, that wasn't the case.
Oh, that was in the 80s, yeah.
So it started to turn in the 80s.
I think the 70s and
the 80s. Late 70s, early 80s, Darcelle. Yeah. Because Portland really is such a unique city that Darcelle kind of became an unofficial mascot. And like Darcelle, to have Darcelle at your event was a big deal. And I think at that point, Darcelle had gotten so popular within the club, like we were saying, never really left the club. But then the invitation started to say, come out of the club and come into the city.
And we've been open so long that I have people come in and say, well, I had my 21st birthday here and now I'm 56 and bring their children in. Yeah.
And so in terms of like the safety of it all, we're seeing like drag shows be like under like attack around the country by like state legislatures. In some places are met by like armed protesters. Have you guys experienced anything like that in Portland?
There was the one gospel group in Old Town where we were picketed and they'd only come on Friday and Saturday when the line was full, you know, big thing to do. Darcelle's Demons with signs and everything. And then they stopped.
Yeah, you weren't mad at all.
I wasn't upset. In fact, when they stopped coming, people said, where's the entertainment outside?
The pre-show.
The pre-show.
So they went away on their own eventually?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, while you're known for being a drag queen, like, you had to be a businessman to, like, keep this club running for 50 years.
Yeah.
A big part of that, too, like, the business side was run by your partner, Roxy, right?
Right, right.
Roxy was kind of like the artistic director of the whole thing. Yes. So all the visuals, and then Darcelle was the creative person to then figure it out. Roxy would say, here's what we want it to look like. Now you figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And they did. And then in the business side, Roxy would handle the payroll and, you know, the books and Darcelle would handle the bookings and all the, you know, they worked in tandem for, you know, almost 50 years.
Yeah.
And so from the very beginning, you were always like partners in like love and business.
Right. I met him at a gay bar, and then I drove him home, but nothing ever happened. He thought I had sugar daddy somewhere.
Why did he think that?
Because you know, in the gay world, first thing you do is have sex, and then you enjoy who it is. How's that? For 3 months, nothing like that happened. We got to know each other, and I knew that this was more than something that just was a passing night.
And what told you that?
Just getting to know him. Just getting to know him. I knew it'd be better if we didn't work just an over one night stand, and it worked. If we hadn't gotten together, there probably wouldn't be a Darcelle.
How was he involved in like the building of like Darcelle?
Well, first of all, he was one of the critics that I listened to. If anybody else told me the things he told me, I wouldn't have created what Darcelle is. And what he told me, I took and knew that it was for love and for caring.
Like Roxy created Darcelle's look, like the face and how it, you know, the trademark appearance, and also came up with the name because he had worked with someone named Darcelle before.
Denise Darcelle in Vegas.
Oh, wow. So, like, Darcelle was, like, a very much like a group project.
More like just a family job. none of this has been planned. Nothing was planned like that. It just happened.
That's such like an intense collaboration. Like, what has it been like to like be like performing Darcel now that he's like passed away?
The night he died, I was at the hospital with him, and I was thinking about going home, and I went downtown, and I didn't want the audience to know that had happened, and I got ready and did the show. And it was important to me to keep going.
It's amazing.
All these years, I love drag.
Well, one thing I was wondering is that in recent years, we've seen like a massive like mainstreaming of drag, in part from Drag Race and other things. Like, how have you seen that change or affect like your business there?
Well, it's good for us all. I never really watched Drag Race because it was always on when I was working.
The thing is, it's so accessible now. If you wanted a dress in 1967, they didn't have dresses like that. You had to sew the pearls on or sew the rhinestones or glue that feathers on. Well, now you just click on Amazon and it's at your house tomorrow. A full realized drag wig and lashes and all that stuff. All the queens now have such accessibility and for the most part are, you know, using it to their advantage. So yeah, all of our cast members and even the queens around town, we have a huge drag community in Portland and everybody's looking the best they ever have just because it's available and it's cheaper than it used to be.
Oh, because I can get like a 24-inch pink wig at my door tomorrow.
Yes, for $19.99, where you wanted that in the past, it would be $200 and then you'd have to dye it yourself in the bathtub. You know, everything's just so easy now.
Yes.
Oh, and I guess too, like you do your drag and then you can also like walk down the street home in full drag. And some places, not all places, some places be safe to do that.
Well, pretty much we know everybody knows who Darcel is and anybody who's in drag is a Darcel.
The name Darcel has become a word locally synonymous with drag. I'm half Darcel's age and I'm black, but people still say, "Hi Darcel," if they see me in drag. And they'll say, "Oh, Darcel, can I have a picture?" Like, and you don't correct him. You say, "Sure, let's take a picture."
Oh, that is so funny.
You know, when people say the mainstreaming of drag has happened since Drag Race, well, Darcel's was never a gay club. It was always open to everyone. And we have 90% heterosexual audiences. We rarely have the gay people that come in they're bringing in their family.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we don't really have a big gay crowd. And so we've always been in our minds, mainstream drag. That's just kind of just what we do. So while in different parts of the country, drag queens are now finally getting to perform for straight people. That's all we've been performing for. So we weren't really like a dark underground drag club that was only for gay people. We never were that. So it's kind of different for us.
I mean, Darcel, you're now 92. It sounds like everything's also set up for this to continue after your death.
When's that going to happen?
Do you know something we don't know?
They just renewed my driver's license for another 15 years. I thank them very much. And my doctor said, well, there was 15 years left on your pacemaker battery.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, well, okay, tell me when it's getting low.
He has, you know, his daughter now is running all the financials. The son, like, had been working. He's still an active part of it. And then just those of us that have been there for 10 plus years, it really is a family. Everybody has their job. Everybody has
their And they do their job beautifully.
And there's no reason, you know, if Darcel and I both were on a bus and it went over a cliff, the club could still continue tomorrow because everyone's invested. We're all in this, you know, together.
And so, I think it's pretty sure it will, but I hope it does happen.
Yeah, there's no reason why it shouldn't continue its success with the groundwork.
See, I'm not at all scared of dying or I can talk about it because I have so many friends that did it too during the episodes of AIDS and all my family. They're gone, except for my, you know, children. But, you know, they did it. I'll do it.
That's Darcelle the 15th, and she was joined by her friend Poison Waters. You can still see Poison perform at Darcelle's showplace in Portland, so next time you're there, check it out. She's there, she says, 3 to 4 nights a week. All right, that is it for our show today, but we will be back in a few months with a brand new season. So if you have any suggestions for guests, any great queer elders you want to hear from, please reach out and let me know. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at JeffMasters1. The show's on there at LGBTQPod. And we also have a website that's LGBTQPodcast.com. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye.